Hi, this is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. Unrest, a pandemic, polarization, and an election. In 2020, I could be talking about a number of countries, but in this episode, we'll be discussing Chile. It's been an incredible year of change for the country, and it all started in October 2019 with protests over a transit fare hike. Those demonstrations expanded to shine a light on how Chile, long seen as a model in Latin America, failed to address deep inequality. The protests also resulted in a push to rewrite a constitution drafted and implemented during the Pinochet dictatorship era. In an October 25th referendum, a year after the protests erupted and amid coronavirus restrictions, 78% of voters backed rewriting that Magna Carta. To get a better idea of how things have gone on the ground in Chile, I spoke with John Bartlett in Santiago, a journalist who has reported about the past year's events for outlets such as The Guardian, Foreign Policy, and The Washington Post. He also plans to continue his coverage as the country faces other major events, electing delegates to a constituent assembly, drafting the new constitution, and holding a presidential election in the middle of it all. Thank you for joining us.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina en Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Thank you very much for being with me today, John. A year ago, Chile surprised many when the country erupted in protests. And given that it's often been framed as this model country in Latin America, it was surprising to many. But it's clear that discontent over inequality bubbled over. And now, a year after the protests, Chileans have overwhelmingly voted in favor of rewriting a 40-year-old dictatorship-era constitution. You've been in Chile and have covered this from the start. A lot has happened since October 18th last year with the protests to now. How would you compare the mood in October last year to now?
Yeah, well, firstly, thanks very much for having me. I think it's a really interesting time to be talking about Chile. I think that, you know, the mood obviously now, I think in the last few days, we've seen almost a bit of a come down, really. It's been a year of intense emotions. I think that people have struggled as much as they have enjoyed it. I think that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of unrest at different times, particularly kind of culminating on Friday evenings. And also, we've dealt with a pandemic in the meantime. So it's been a difficult time here in Chile. But I think the mood back in October 2019, as you say, when everything really kicked off here in Chile, I think that the catharsis, it was palpable. I think you went out on the streets and you saw people mixing between social groups, age groups, and things that doesn't really happen so often in Chile. It's an incredibly segregated society, almost for the first time. And I think that people were sharing their emotions, their thoughts, their kind of ideas of how they actually wanted the country to look. So I think that, you know, people had a real cause to get out onto the streets and to voice all of these demands in October last year. And I think that it's really kind of the culmination, or the first culmination, maybe the first kind of peak of that kind of emotion coming to a head was on Sunday when we had this vote, which seemed to really kind of vindicate everything that people had been saying. You know, that if you look at the way the results were broken down, you saw that here in Santiago, for example, there were three districts that voted majority in favor of rechazo against drafting a new constitution. And those are the ones that people have been saying for such a long time that were basically directing the cultural, political, social, economic course of the country. So it's fascinating to see. And I think that, you know, like the turnout is something that people have talked a lot about. I personally think that more than 50%, which is the highest since it returned to the optional voting the first time in 2015. I think from then on, it's been low participation, and more than 50% during a pandemic is fairly impressive. And like you say, it was a huge majority that voted in favour of the constitution. So I think at the moment, in summary, I think that we're kind of in a bit of a lull after the emotion of Sunday night, which was incredible. I mean, being here in Santiago when that happened, it felt like something that I never thought I'd see in this country. And it was beautiful to see kind of democracy work so well and so efficiently, which is something we've all been talking quite a lot about recently.
You mentioned different groups of people that wouldn't normally be together coming out and being in the streets and getting together around this movement. One thing is that Chile is often framed as being a very polarized society, but 78% of people voted in favor of rewriting the constitution, and a similar figure voted in favor of having a constituent assembly that would be having publicly selected delegates rather than a mixed one that would be made up half of legislators. So there was some real coming together and massive support that looks pretty unified. So my question for you is, do you see Chile as being unified in this moment? And are there areas where you see divisions?
Yeah, I think in summary, yes, I think that this is something that has unified Chile. I don't think it's unanimously unified Chile. I think that, you know, there is still significant portion of the society that are happy under the model that the dictatorship left behind. But I think that a significant proportion of the population saw this as something that had to happen for the country to move forward. I don't think that people are necessarily denying the progress that happened between 1990 and 2018 and further forward. But I think that people thought that this is something that we have to do. But one thing I do think is there's still a huge disconnect between the ruling elite here in Chile, who are the kind of social, kind of political, economic powers, and they, you know, have vast monopolies on a lot of the main industries, particularly the media, for example, which I think is a really interesting one. Because if you'd been watching the Chilean news over the last year, you'd have thought this would have been, a complete orgy of chaos, basically, and fire and fury and burning churches and things. That has been happening, but it's been peripheral around overwhelmingly peaceful protests. And I think it's the kind of thing that you can't necessarily hide when you let people go to the polls. So I think that was a really interesting thing to have come out of the weekend. It almost sort of vindicated what people had been saying on the streets, but not necessarily what had been reflected in the media. So I think that, you know, there are still huge divisions to be healed. Looking at the kind of pre-candidates for the presidential election, which is another interesting aspect of this tightly packed electoral calendar over the next couple of years here in Chile. Two of the leading candidates up until this vote at the weekend, I haven't seen any polls since, were a communist mayor and a prominent figure during the dictatorship as well. So, you know, if you want to kind of look at the institutions and how political parties sort of are looking ahead of the next presidential election, then yes, Chile's still incredibly divided. And, you know, it's a country that's lived on the margins of the political spectrum for such a long time. But it's very interesting to see that I think politically, perhaps people don't have the same idea of the future of the country. But in terms of a future kind of without any kind of relic or vestige of the Pinochet dictatorship, then yes, that's what is unifying Chile at the moment.
And it's interesting what you say about sort of a control of media and what gets out as a story in the media. We see this in a lot of countries, that a lot of times social movements might get covered. And you do see, as you said, like the burning churches or what have you. Is there an angle or a side of what's been happening in Chile that you think hasn't been covered, that you in yourself covering the country over the past year feel like needs more attention, whether it's nationally or internationally, in terms of coverage of what's been going on?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I think that one thing that I've certainly realized is that being on the ground, I think, is a huge advantage, particularly nowadays when you've got a phone and you've got Twitter and you can start showing people what's actually going on through some short clips and on the ground. But you are only seeing, you know, what's in front of you. So I think that you're obviously missing quite a lot as well when you're doing it. I think it's important to kind of, you know, be as broad as possible with the coverage. But often I'll go to these marches and I'll come home and click on the TV and find that everyone's talking about burning churches and things. So I think that, you know, there's no images whatsoever of, you know, kind of, you know, tens of thousands of people, particularly on the 18th of October, this kind of first anniversary of the movement exploding last year, gathered peacefully in the crowd. And I was sort of going off down the side streets and seeing what was happening. And there was vandalism, arson, violence, destruction, but that wasn't everything, you know. And I think that it is very difficult to cover that, particularly as one person or as one outlet. I think the movement's been covered comprehensively. It's been really well covered by correspondents, by the Chilean press as well, who get a pretty hard time, to be honest, because basically the ownership is largely the same. There are two huge kind of media groups which dominate the ownership of the main papers and TV channels here, and people are well aware of that. And there's a kind of movement as well that you see graffitied all over the streets where people saying, turn off the TV, or like the TV lies. That's nothing new. I mean, we see that everywhere in every kind of social movement. I think that, you know, people have a certain part of the media they want to trust. But the media in general is taking a bit of a battering over the last year here in Chile. But I think that it's been fairly comprehensively covered. And I don't think the coverage has been poor. I just think that it's difficult to know to what extent the editorial line is affecting what actually gets out there, because this wasn't an overwhelmingly violent movement, as the government have insisted over the course of the last year. And I think that, you know, you have to have a bit of nuance sometimes when you talk about what these movements are about.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's very symbolic that it has been a year since the protest began, and that then there was this vote for a whole new process to rewrite the Constitution. But that vote was supposed to happen in April. And of course, it got postponed in the middle of a pandemic. Now, Chile's had all kinds of measures in place, quarantines, things like that. I'm curious, how do you see the pandemic having affected the movement?
I think more than anything, what it did was it gave Chileans a sort of vital moment of introspection. I think that towards the kind of the later summer months, we're talking about sort of January, February time here, and then up to March as well, with this huge march for International Women's Day on the 8th of March. It was absolutely incredible here in Santiago, the number of people that went out. But I think that, you know, towards the end of the summer, the movement was fraying and it was becoming a bit fractured and a bit difficult, a bit incoherent, I think. Locking Chileans down and sort of sending them indoors for the winter, which was, having been here the whole time, it wasn't fun. It was incredibly draconian, the lockdown, as it's been, you know, around the world at different times. But here it lasted for a really long time. And I think what it did was kind of gave people time to reflect. And I think there was, you know, I don't know if it was concern, but I think people were starting to wonder, like, you know, would the momentum be carried through after the lockdown's lifted? But there were several things that happened during the lockdown, which I think really, you know, took the emphasis back onto some of the demands of the social movement. That, you know, people were talking about healthcare, for example. There were all sorts of stats coming about the mortality rate in public hospitals compared to the private clinics up in the three districts of Santiago, for example, that voted to maintain the current constitution. So, you know, I think that those things are really important. There were several things that happened. The former health minister came on TV at one point and said that he hadn't had any idea about the levels of poverty and overcrowding in the southern districts of Santiago. And that kind of thing was incredibly jarring, considering this was a social movement that we'd all been hugely involved in over such a long period of time. That I think that maybe even the thoughts and the demands that people had before were cemented over the course of those protests. And then, you know, as the lockdowns lifted and we started to kind of see people gather again in the center of Santiago. And I keep talking about Santiago, this was happening across the country, but obviously I've been here the whole time because of lockdowns. It's not been easy to travel. And but, you know, so we sort of saw people kind of, you know, get back out onto the streets. And again, there was, you know, the same feelings were there. People hadn't forgotten about it, but the police were more organized. They'd started to defend the statue in Plaza Italia here in Santiago as if it was the most important thing in the country. So we saw that, and it was this sort of, you know, quite comical battle, really. But then that all started to kind of, you know, dissipate a little bit. And then, you know, as we got to the 18th of October for this first anniversary, a week before the referendum, then we saw a huge march, and it was abundantly clear that people hadn't forgotten what had been going on before, and this was something that Chileans really did want.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing is that early in your response, you mentioned the women's movement, and for anyone who is listening and isn't aware, one of the things that's very interesting about this process is that half of the members of the Constituent Assembly have to be women. So this is going to be the first constitution in the world that will be drafted with gender parity. It's quite exciting. I want to talk a little bit more about what this has been like under the pandemic. How have you as a journalist been affected covering it, given the lockdowns? How has it affected your coverage of what's been going on in Chile over the past year?
Yeah, well, I think personally, I've learned a lot about myself and what I enjoy doing in terms of reporting. I enjoy going out and interviewing people and talking to people and, you know, sort of having these conversations and seeing what people are actually saying. And obviously, none of us have been able to do any of that over the last sort of 6 months or so. And it's been quite liberating as well over the last 2 or 3 weeks of being able to go out again and really talk to protesters and say, you know, how was your lockdown? Like, what were you thinking? How are you kind of thinking of voting in the referendum and things like that? But yeah, I mean, from my point of view, I spent a lot of time at my desk. I did a lot of writing. I did a lot of kind of reporting and a lot of Zoom interviews as well, which is, you know, the sort of new normal, I guess. But yeah, I think that the difficult thing was that you were here in Santiago. There was a lot of, you know, control. It was very difficult to get the right permits to go out at different times, particularly if you were moving between these kind of areas where they had dynamic lockdowns. So what they were doing was basically like raising and lowering lockdowns over different districts of the city. And, you know, I found myself at one point, my house was the kind of the building I live in. You could leave by one door and be free to do whatever you want, and leave by the other door and be in full lockdown and you weren't allowed to do anything. So it was a strange kind of time that, you know, people weren't ever really sure what was happening with regards to lockdowns. But what it did obviously affect is that you couldn't really get out onto the streets and talk to these people. And it's all very well kind of, you know, hearing people's experience over the phone, but, you know, it's obviously not the same. I think that journalists here in Chile is all I can really, really, really speak for. But, you know, talking to other correspondents and people who work for national news here, I think that people who have learned kind of different skills and have started doing a lot more of these reports in advance over the phone. But I think that's probably what was lacking more than anything, was the colour that you could kind of introduce subjects and characters with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, personal stories at a time when there's a lot happening. Now, Chile has been going through this at the same time that we've been seeing a tumultuous time around the world in many countries, particularly in countries in the Americas. We saw protests in neighboring Bolivia. The United States itself has obviously had raging protests. So I'm picking those two because there are also countries that have gone through election processes and through all of this. I'm curious what in your view, but of course each country has its own distinct situation that it's going through. I'm curious in your view what you see as being similar with other countries and what you see as being distinct in this year of tumult, if you will.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, I mean, we can sort of take that back to when everything exploded here in Chile as well. I mean, people were talking about a Latin spring to rival the Arab spring and things like that. And it was obviously it's a very difficult thing. I mean, you're comparing the Middle East to Latin America. I mean, I don't even know where to begin with that. But I think that like we saw at the time, there was all these protests in Colombia. We'd seen things kick off in Argentina at one point as well. So, you know, there were kind of different things happening around the region. I think that politically, Chile is obviously a bit of an outlier anyway, and that, you know, it's a relatively, at least institutionally, it's an incredibly stable country, and I don't think that's going to change. I think that the reputation of institutions here have really suffered, particularly the police, given everything we've seen over the last year. But then obviously, you know, kind of other institutions and traditional political parties as well. But yeah, I think that, you know, if you look at the causes of what happened in the US, I think that, you know, kind of police reform is now on the table in Chile as well. I mean, I think these are all fairly kind of superficial comparisons. I think that it's quite difficult to place the kind of the Chilean movement in any other context, really, because it's just got such a unique history in terms of the dictatorship and the extent to which, you know, and this isn't obviously not a uniquely Chilean phenomenon, it's something very Latin American in general, but the extent to which wealth, power, resources, influence, opportunity is concentrated in a tiny corner of a capital city is an incredible thing to have seen. Kind of, I mean, it's not falling apart, and I don't think that, you know, the 1% that own a third of the wealth in Chile, I don't think they're going to necessarily suffer because of this. But I do think that it's been interesting to see that happen, and I think it's a really interesting time to be talking about Chile as well, obviously with the world's newest constitutional process underway. Well, it's going to be underway in April, but already seeing people kind of put themselves forward as candidates to be part of that assembly. And also it's part of a broader conversation on the future of capitalism, what it means. I mean, Chile relies on its kind of extractivist axes in terms of mining, forestry, agriculture, fisheries. You know, these are really important parts of the kind of pillars of the Chilean economy. So I think it's really interesting to be talking about that and how we can work towards a more sustainable future. And I think that Chile has an opportunity, certainly in a gender equal constitutional body, to set an incredible example for the world. Whether that will happen or not, and we can talk about the kind of fraught couple of years ahead is another matter. But I think there's certainly a huge opportunity.
And that actually brings me to my last question. You've made reference to some of these things in some of your other answers, but Chile's gone through a really dramatic past year, and there are really dramatic times ahead of it, because there will be this process to pick the people who will be drafting this constitution. There is the presidential election in 2021 that you referenced. There'll be the process of creating this document in and of itself. And then there'll be in 2022, most likely, a referendum on the document that has been drafted. I mean, there is a lot. We've had a lot of interesting things happening in Chile, and there's a lot to come. What are the things that give you hope about the next steps? And what do you see as the areas that could be problems or causes for concern?
We'll start with the problems, because I think it's better to finish on a positive. I think that in terms of the problems looking ahead, there's, you know, the clear kind of mechanical side of the constitutional process is going to be incredibly important. So one of the big kind of caveats that was introduced as part of this agreement to hold a constitutional referendum is that within this body, to have any article or chapter included, you're going to need 2/3 supermajority of the body in agreement in order to include the article. So I think that's obviously a big kind of caveat on the whole process. Whether that means that it's going to be quite a scant constitution or not, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be very difficult. We don't even know who's going to be in that body yet in terms of the conservative and the sort of progressive vetoes on either side. But I think there's certainly a danger of that. I think that as well as, you know, you're basically asking 155 people that have never worked together before, don't know one another, have never written a constitution, not that anyone really has, to basically write one within a year. I think the period can be prorogued as well by 6 months. There can be an extension to the period. That was also another stipulation. But I think that it's an incredibly tight turnaround, basically, particularly with a kind of a change of government in the middle of it all.
It's incredible. Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that happens. But then as well, you know, there are obviously a lot of positives as well. I think that, you know, one of the most beautiful things that came out of the social movement, you know, more than the kind of catharsis of people being able to talk about all these things that have divided dinner tables for such a long time. I mean, Chile is an incredibly divided country. I mean, you know, it's no secret that kind of openly proponents of the dictatorship are active in all spheres of life and not just in the political elite. I mean, you know, you see it all over the country and, you know, outside of Santiago particularly as well. So I think that, you know, it's a moment of healing. And I think that one of the things that we really saw were these cabildos, these kind of town hall style meetings that were taking place around Santiago, around the country, around the world as well. Chileans were kind of meeting in parks and things. And yeah, people kind of came together here in Santiago. And I went to a lot of them in these sort of the few green spaces that Santiago has to offer. People were kind of gathering in small groups and just sort of no holds barred conversation about what the country could look like. And I think that process has been institutionalized. I mean, that was beautiful to see. And I think that the institutional political response to the whole social movements to call a constitutional referendum. So that'll be really interesting to see how that kind of coalesces as a more formal process, because, you know, these people are kind of collecting all these demands and there were some incredible ideas getting thrown around at the time as to how Chile could best divide and use its obviously impressive capital resources. So it's going to be fascinating. And I'm looking forward to covering it over the next couple of years and seeing what happens.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading your coverage, because there are going to be some very interesting times ahead of the country. So I want to thank you so much for talking with me, John. It's really been great to hear what's been going on the ground in Santiago. And thank you very much for being with me today.
Thanks so much. It was great to speak.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis. This episode was produced by Katie Hopkins. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. Learn about concerts online at musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, help us spread the word. Write us a review, give us 5 stars, and subscribe on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.